Economy's been a little rough, man.
Ah, man, just brutal.
You know, it's times like these that E-Trade can really help you replan your investments. Yep. So, you know, it gives you the tools and research. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Take control. Rise up.
Dude,
No.
What?
Stop.
What? I can't flex the golden pipes?
It's not the venue.
It's inspiration.
Any place.
Fine.
Okay, where was I?
I'm going to fly again.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
No, I'm just poking at your funny bone. I am quite alarmed.
And so we're looking at a situation here where, as you said, the banks are going to be closed. The fiat money is going to be essentially worthless. The economy is going to completely just crater.
Yes. In a nutshell, it'll be worse than that. Because when you think about it and you think what it takes to make an economy or a society function, people got to get paid to go to work. If you don't think you're going to get paid, who's going to go drive the bus? Who's going to drive the truck to deliver the food? Who's going to turn on, you know, go to work to turn the power on?
Right. We're talking about a complete collapse of society if that happens.
Yes. And the question is, we are going to fall down. The question is, how quickly can we get up?
Yeah.
How well have the good guys prepared this situation for a rebirth of our nation?
Well, let me turn that around on you. How well do you think they have prepared us to turn this thing around if and when, you know, the economy collapses?
There's a lot of signs that there's a lot of preparation that has gone on. Just listen to what Ron Paul says. You know, Ron has been involved with this since the Gold Commission days, even into the 70s with Greenspan and Ronald Reagan and the secret group. He's been involved the whole time. The whole time they had him slated for president once this happened. And I believe he's still slated for president. You know, when we do have something as big as a fiat money collapse, people are going to turn to, you know, who's at fault? They're going to say, well, obviously the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
Just kick them out. We'll put that whole function of dealing with our money into the Treasury Department. Obviously, Tim Geithner will be gone. They'll probably put someone like Paul Volcker in there, who's the guy who said, you know, said we need the Volcker rule, which basically tells all the banks they can't trade for their own account anymore. He's the guy who jacked interest rates up to 20% to save the dollar in the early 80s.
And so, but what's going to happen to the president then? You think he's going to be taken out of office because of this?
Well, you can. There are people who control him now.
Yeah, that's becoming clearer and clearer as the months go by.
And those people will be taken out of control. So, you know, do they have a plan? Do the good guys have a plan to say, okay, I think Obama kind of got in there as a bad guy, and the good guy said, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to spend as much money as possible. You're going to destroy the U.S. dollar, and then you're going to walk away when we tell you, you know, either it might be the birth certificate thing, or it might be, you know, it could be anything.
Yeah.
It could be. There's a lot of talk, you know, and on the conspiracy side, which is where this interview is, there's a lot of talk that the United States of America was turned into a corporation in the 1930s.
I've heard that.
It's the United States of America Corporation, so all the laws passed since the 1930s are null and void. All the presidents elected are null and void. You know, is that true? I have no idea. I tried to go down that path, and it was way beyond me.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so if that came out, then it would be a situation where we'd have to start from scratch and re-elect a new president, if you will.
Exactly. You know, I always thought it would be some kind of special election. But, you know, if you look at what's going on in Congress right now with the Republicans in charge of the House, they're going to elect the Speaker of the House in January.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the Speaker of the House is third in line, if Obama is said, okay, you didn't have the right passport, you weren't American born or whatever it is, and they said you have to stand down, Biden would stand down because he ran on the ticket with Obama, so it would be the Speaker of the House would be president. Well, they could put Ron Paul as the Speaker of the House if they wanted.
Yeah, I'm skeptical of that ever happening.
That's a stretch. But it would fit in line with everything we see going on.
Okay. Well, if Ron Paul gets put in, I'll make a deal with you, Bix. If Ron,
right.
If Ron, this is probably a terrible idea, but if Ron Paul becomes Speaker of the House, then I will go max out my cards and buy as much gold as possible.
See, that would be too late.
Oh no!
It would have the event would have had to happen for Ron Paul.
Oh.
But what do you think would happen if there is a monetary crash in the next couple of weeks?
What do you think?
Who do you think they'd put in as Speaker of the House? Who would they want as the next president?
Oh, that's true. I see what you're saying there. Yeah, okay. So this would come about after that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If everything's the status quo when this interview airs, no, Ron Paul won't be president. We'll still be battling the battles with the bankers, and, you know, hopefully the good guys will still be in charge of trying to, you know, end this madness that we got going on right now. But, you know, I don't see it. I see in the next 2 weeks or so the beginning of the end, the collapse of one of these large banks that the FDIC keeps saying we're going to have to take down a couple of these large banks. They are so interconnected with their derivatives in the trillions upon trillions of dollars that nothing can survive it. That's why Buffett called it weapons of mass financial destruction.
So, like, if Bank of America collapsed, that would mean that I wouldn't have to pay my credit card bill anymore?
Well, you got to run the scenario. If Bank of America collapsed,
yeah,
they have $50 trillion in derivatives. Every single one of their counterparties would collapse.
Yeah.
Which is basically everybody. And then their counterparties would collapse. And it is really a domino effect. So you're not going to worry about your credit card bills, your house bills, or anything. You're going to worry about, oh, my God.
We're going to get food.
What do we do now?
Yeah.
Where do I get food? Where do I get water? People will turn to our government and say, you better have a goddamn plan. Because especially with the stuff I'm talking about, saying that this is all planned.
Yeah.
This has been in the works since the early 70s. And if they don't have a plan by now, I'll be the most pissed off of everybody.
Now, what's the role of silver in all this situation?
Silver. Well, the role of silver right now is the role of the silver bullet. The role of silver is to take down the bad guys. The bad guys, meaning right now, it's J.P. Morgan. Bear Stearns used to have the silver bullet, which is the silver short position, the controller of the silver price.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when Bear Stearns went down, J.P. Morgan took it over. And it's 30,000 naked short contracts, which is 150 million ounces of silver. Now, they use that. This is on the COMEX, the futures and options trading, where basically prices are set. They use that position to steer the price. Silver should be – look at it this way. Gold, there's five times as much gold as there is silver out there.
Oh, wow.
Silver trades for 1/50th the price of gold. Silver is used in almost every industrial applications related to electronics. Every cell phone, every flat screen TV has little bits of silver in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the manufacturers, it's a small cost to them. So to make a flat screen TV, you might need a half an ounce of silver. Well, if silver is trading for $25 an ounce, no big deal, $12.50, you know, I can throw that into the cost of my TV. If silver's trading at $1,000 an ounce, all of a sudden your TV's gone up $500.
Yeah.
And people will raise their ears and say, why? Why in the world did silver that was trading around $10 or $20 for years and years and years, why is it now trading at $1,000 an ounce or $2,000 an ounce? Why is that? And then it'll come out, the whole silver conspiracy, how long that's been going on. I mean, silver, if you dig back into the guts of silver manipulation, you got to go back into the 1800s when Britain controlled pretty much everything and figured out that they got to get rid of the silver standard, silver as money, because they didn't have a lot of silver. You know, who had the silver? China had all the silver. India had all the silver.
Yeah.
Literally, the powers that run the banking in England have, for the last 150 years, tried to demonetize silver, take it out of the people's hands. And now literally with what's going on at the CFTC, which is the kind of the SEC of commodities.
Yeah.
They're about to shut them down. They're about to say, okay, no more rigging the silver market. And in a blink of an eye, silver will jet from $30 to you name it. You name your price. I wrote an article called $6,000 silver.
Do you think there's enough gold in the world for a gold standard to actually work, or is that sort of where the Yamashita's gold comes in?
Well, yeah. I mean, once the secrets are out, once the crash of the monetary system, the people are going to, of every country, are going to decide for their, at first, for just their own country, what they want to use as money. Now, a lot of countries don't have gold. They don't have access to gold, and so they might use something else. They might continue on using paper and trust their government. The U.S. has a history of using gold as money.
Yeah.
We have a lot of gold. We have a ton of gold. We can use silver. We can use copper. We can use coins. The key is that it's open and transparent, and the people have the right to know when. You know, right now, we don't know what the Fed does at all.
Right.
And the real money, the money creation is not what you see in like the M1, M2, M3 money supply data. Mm-hmm. The real money is in the derivatives and the what they call the shadow banking system. And it's I'm hearing rumors in the quadrillions. Quadrillions of U.S. dollars floating out there. Factories in Russia printing out $100 bills. Why not? It's not illegal in Russia, is it, to print $100 bills?
Interesting. Yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah.
It's the whole concept that we've been programmed to believe that not only is paper money, but electronic blips count as money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I read an interesting fact that the $100 bill only costs like 4 cents to make, so it really, you know.
But you don't even have to make them anymore.
That's true.
You can use your Visa card and, you know, how many cents does it cost to put, you know, $100 worth of blips in your account?
Yeah, that's true. Now, as a resident of the Boston area, what's the significance? You said that this comic was printed on the Boston Fed's website. What's the significance of the Boston Fed in this whole thing? Could it just as easily have been the Chicago Fed or the LA Fed, or is Boston significant to this?
Boston is significant in that I believe from my research that's where the original ideas of rigging the computer market, rigging the markets with computers came out of. And as in kind of an altruistic way of thinking,
yeah,
because it was Stephen DuVoe who went to school in Boston. I forgot which school, but he went to school in Boston, went over to work in the Fed Boston, and he was in charge of setting up the computer programs and implementing the long-term implementation of the gold standard is what it is, basically.
Okay.
And then there was another guy at the Fed Boston who just recently retired or died or something that was the liaison between the primary banks and the Federal Reserve. So when the Fed wants to go in and rig the market, they don't do it themselves. They go to their prime dealers. They'll go to J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Goldman, and say, okay, I need you to officially change the price of gas from $60 down to $40 over a one-week period. And so then the primary dealers get out there, program in their computers, and they rig the market down to wherever they need by trading it back and forth.
Okay. Now, you said that Greenspan sort of amped up his plan after 9/11. I guess what was it about 9/11 that encouraged him to speed up his plan, and how much has he accelerated this whole thing?
Well, if you look at – and I got this from the original – comic. The original comic Wishes and Rainbows. There's a single frame in that comic that has Ruta, the little girl, writing economic formulas in the sand as to how she's going to allocate the colored flowers or allocate the new money type of thing, right? So in the original comic, the one that was released in 1981, she was writing those formulas I talked about from the 60s, those economic allocation models, the road to the golden age and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
All those formulas were in the sand. In the new one, in the new version, and this is the only change, in the new version, she's not writing those formulas. Those formulas aren't there. What she wrote is 11 plus 9 or 9-11. And then there's an Islamic crescent moon in the sand also. So my theory was and is, if you really want to understand 9-11, you need to read two or three different reports. And they're on my website under the resources button on the left side. And I don't know if your readers have read them. They will absolutely blow your mind. They're called Collateral Damage, U.S. Covert Operations and the Terrorist Attacks on September 11th.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, yep.
And if you read those reports, they're very long, but you read those and then everything makes sense. What was it about 9-11? There was billions of dollars in phony bonds, supposedly, that were supposed to mature on September 12th. You know, if you go into where the planes hit the buildings, what floors were taking out, it was these bond trading floors that would have found out the scandal. You got Building 7 that housed all the documents for gold manipulation that Gatto was suing the banks for. I mean, if you read these reports, everything will click in your head. And also, it talks about Yamashita's gold in there. It talks about all the players who were involved in rigging the markets and the whole banking shadow world. Literally, those two reports alone will just blow your mind.
So I guess, who put together the reports? Independent group?
Kind of unknown. But the way they talk about the ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence,
yeah,
I believe it was someone out of the ONI. Now, the ONI was the direct spot. They were running the investigation into the bankers. That's directly the area of the Pentagon that was blown up, and all their records were lost there. So I think it was someone from the ONI that wrote these reports. But you can tell when you read them that they're in the know. And all this stuff that they write about is gleaned from public documents. That's the amazing thing about so much of the conspiracy side of things. A lot of it is just out there in public documents. People just haven't put the pieces together.
So what are they putting forward, the idea that 9-11 was, I guess you could say, an orchestrated attack to stave off loss of control by the financial bad guys?
They put forth that there are many different levels to 9-11. And, you know, obviously it wasn't Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a given now. It's, you know, nobody even talks about it.
Yeah, it's like Lee Harvey Oswald.
Exactly. What they put forth is they show you who benefits from it, what areas were taken out in both Building 1, Building 2, Building 7, and the Pentagon. And they bring back history of Yamashita's gold, of the setup of the banks to run black ops, of all sorts of stuff. It's a long report, but I urge all your listeners, if there's anything you read about the conspiracy behind the banking system, behind 9-11, read these two reports. There's three now. There's three reports, and they're all on the website under resources on the left side there. But literally, you'll spend days reading it, and every single line will just blow your mind. But it all kind of makes sense. That's the strange thing. All those mysteries that you don't quite understand will come into perfect view. But back to your question.
Yeah.
That I believe is why, you know, if I'm just talking about Greenspan, and he was one of the original guys to implement the computer market rigging. He lost control of it in the late 80s, all throughout the 90s till 2001. Then 9-11 hit, and Greenspan and the original good guys, who, you know, this was originally supposed to be a good thing, said, we have to take these bankers down, and the only way to do it is take away all regulation and give them enough rope to hang themselves. And that's what they've done.
What was supposed to be the good thing, though? Not 9-11.
It was the long-term use of fiat money to build, you know, we've built millions of houses only because of fiat money. And, you know, the thing is, why gold is so good and so bad is that it constrains spending.
Yeah.
You can only, you know, if you use gold as money, the only money you have is gold. So, you know, gold is mined, the amount of gold in the world is mined at about, it grows at about 2% per year, which coincidentally is about the growth of the population. That's why gold is so good. You'll never have too much, and you'll never have too little, but, you know, it's human nature to say, I want more.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if, you know, and with fiat money, you know, all the houses that you see that are being foreclosed, they would have never been built. Now, you might argue that, hey, it would have been better. It would have been disciplined. It would have been, yes, true. But let's do it now. If we wipe away all the debt now, we've got these houses. We've got a lot of people. They can live in these houses and, you know, for free. No more mortgage.
Again, Vex, I got to say, sounds almost too good to be true, although I presume there'll be a rough patch there when no one can get any money anymore and, you know, there's no point in going to your job or anything, and we're all sort of huddled around the TV to wait to see what the hell happens next.
What is the plan? And hopefully, you know, I got to think, you know, these guys, these are not dumb people. They've hidden this thing for so long, and they've been working on it for so long, and they're almost there. I gotta believe that they have plans, transition plans. And it's not gonna be easy. It's gonna be really rough for a little while. But in the end, imagine the United States with no debt, the people with no debt, every school is funded, every fire station, every police station is funded, everything is fully funded.
Now, do you think the delay of the $100 bill was due to them waiting for this collapse to happen?
You got to remember, the $100 bill is the most counterfeited bill in the world.
Yeah.
And it has been since they started printing these new bills. So you got to ask yourself, well, why did they wait for the 100? Why did they start with the 20 and then go to the 5, the 10, and the 50? And they haven't, you notice they haven't changed the 1. Because of all the Illuminati references, I think, on the back of it.
Yeah.
So why did they wait to do the 100 last when it's the most counterfeited and it would make the most difference because it's $100? Then they showed it. They announced the 100 and said, here it is. And lo and behold, it's got gold all over it. It's got talk of overthrowing your government right above the 100. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more meaningful bill.
Yeah.
And then after I wrote my article about all the hidden meanings in the new $100 bill, weeks later they said, "Oh, you know, we're gonna delay it from February to unknown time because we had problems with creasing." But you know, in on my website in the article, I show a video of them printing out literally pallets full of hundreds, and they're all perfect, and they're all ready to go, and they have been ready to go for 2 years since the first takedown. That we tried to take down the bad guys. So, will they delay it? I don't think so. I think the good guys, hopefully they're not delaying it because they think it'll take longer for the transition from the crash to getting back on our feet. That would be bad because the longer it goes that it takes us to, you know, get sound money back in the United States, the worse things might happen.
Yeah, yeah, because we're talking about a complete societal collapse here.
Exactly. So if it, you know, my take is we'll have a week or two of bank closures. Then we'll announce, okay, the banks are reopening, and everybody will be started off with some money, maybe. And there'll be 2 months of chaos, but a week of nothing open. And
okay.
Then I'm hoping. Because, you know, when you think about all the complexity of everything, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, well, it goes back to kind of what I said earlier here about this being too good to be true. Because, you know, for the season premiere here of BOA Audio Season 6, we had Jim Mars on. You know, he's also predicting a financial collapse, but he's saying it, you know, is going to happen in a completely – the outcome, I guess you could say, is going to be completely different. That, you know, at that point, the United States will – be absorbed essentially into a world government, that we're that you know, United States is the last, you know, stumbling block to a new world order, and that much like we have established here in our conversation that the bad guys want the economy to fail, he's saying the same thing, but for completely different reasons. Well, I guess the same reasons that you're saying. Obviously, the bad guys want us in the new world order, so it's like, you know, I guess we have to wait and see.
Well, that's, you know, that's and I thought the same thing for the longest time, for, you know, because I was battling the what I thought were the bad guys in our government and in the banks with my years at GATA, you know, fighting every day for, you know, someone in the CFTC to stand up and stop the rigging of the markets, until I discovered all this other stuff. Now, you know, obviously that was the plan. The original plan of the bad guys was to crash the system and take over the world and, you know, decrease the population and masters and slaves type of thing. The road to Ruta theory, you know, a lot of people saying it's too good to be true. A lot of people saying it's too off the wall to be true. A lot of people saying it scares me more than, you know, the one world government type of thing. Because at least with the one world government, you know where you stand. With the road to Ruta, it's the rebirth of our country. What am I going to do? I liked my banking job.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with myself? I can't start fresh.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I don't know the future. I don't know where this is going to all end up. I do know that we need to crash the system to get rid of the debt, because if we don't, the bad guys will win.
Yeah.
And there'll be debt slavery camps and the whole thing, all that stuff that's been predicted for so long.
Debt slavery camps?
Oh, yeah. You haven't heard that one?
No. What is this?
Part of their master plan was, you know, get everybody in debt and then crash the system, and those, you know, have the debts remain, but all their assets go away. Whoever has debts have to work in these slave camps until they work off their debt.
I don't think that would ever fly in America, but...
See, that's where we are. That's the key to these last few years, is kind of an awakening of the American spirit in the people. And I can walk down the street today, and I'll guarantee you that not one person would say, I want the bankers to be bailed out ever again. They're all saying, let them fry. I don't care if I lose everything, let them fry.
Yeah. That's pretty much where I'm at, because I don't want to pay my bills anymore, so that would be great.
Well, we'll know soon enough.
Yeah. Well,
but, you know, there is another restructuring possibility out there, and it's with the NESRA law,
mm-hmm.
or NESRA Act. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
The NESRA Act, and you can find it at NESRA.org, NESARA.org, and it's been around for 10, 15 years. And what it does is it takes all debt that's out there, and it goes back to a gold standard, but it takes all debt. It removes all the interest you've paid from your principal, and that's your new principal. So if you've owned your house for 10 years, and you have a $1 million house, and you've paid $800,000 in interest so far, it would readjust your principal balance. Subtract $800,000 off your million, and your principal would only be $200,000.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, that it's kind of a readjustment. The problem, I think, with that is that you don't take care of that shadow banking system.
Yeah,
as those people printing in the shadows, the derivatives, all that needs to be wiped clean, or they're going to gain power again.
It certainly feels like we're headed towards something here. This financial system is clearly untenable at this point. So, you know, this is partially why I wanted to have you on the show, because I've gotten people asking when we're going to get more into this and stuff. And you know, your theory, at least, I'm not as frightened of your theory as I am of a new world order. So, I'd be more in favor of what you're describing.
I'll tell you that I'm in the minority when it comes to this theory, but the closer we get to it, and as things transpire that are, you know, for example, Alan Greenspan talking about going back under a gold standard just recently, that was unheard of 5 years ago. Everybody used to laugh at me when I'd say that. The collapse of the system, of the and the anger towards the bankers is going to go a long way.
Exactly, yeah. My only concern is I have faith in you and me and the listeners of this program and the educated folks out there, but unfortunately we're a small minority compared to the mainstream, you know, Justin Bieber fans who will just do whatever the government tells them. So it's troublesome in a sense. Do you know what I mean? I'd like to have faith that the people will know the right thing to ask for, but at the same time, come on, these are the same people who didn't legalize marijuana. So obviously they're clearly not playing with a full deck.
I hear you, but the re-education of America that's gone over the last couple of years with the things Ron Paul says, and you know, there's a Ron Paul fever that goes through the college campuses now because it makes sense what he's saying.
Yeah.
And people are waking up in America. They are saying, oh my, and the internet and your show and all these available avenues to get the real story, and people don't even listen to the TV anymore. They just laugh at it.
Yeah.
It's hit that point where the alternative media is taken over. And it's about time. And part of the new America will be the freeing up of the media, getting rid of the controllers of our media and getting rid of them, just absolutely wiping them clean and say, okay, you know, whether or not it'll be government mandated or free market media, I don't know. But that is a huge part of the problem is the mainstream media.
Now, part of your theory also suggests, you know, sort of this end of globalization.
Yeah.
Which would be a stunning turn of events, I guess.
Would it really, though? I mean, and this comes directly from the Road to Ruta teacher's guide.
Mm-hmm.
When they talk about, literally, they talk about some of the questions, they go on and say, okay, what does Ruta find in color and what will she do with the flowers when they die? Things like that. One of the questions is, when will commerce start up again with her neighbors? Will they start trading again?
Yeah.
If you think about the death of the dollar, which is what we're approaching, there's going to be some very angry people out there.
Absolutely.
Our largest trading partner is China, who just happens to also be our largest debt holder. They are our bank. If we tell our bank that, oh, by the way, those little pieces of paper that you hold are worthless, what are they going to do? You think they'll keep trading with us? Would we actually give them something other than dollars? Would we give them gold? No. We're going to need that gold for our own commerce. But China won't be mad because they're in on it too. Wen Jiabo, the premier of China, was in charge of their gold mining operations way back when. And then he got in charge of commerce. He was a buddy of Greenspan's. They're all in on it.
Okay, so you're saying, because then my other concern is that there's this collapse and then it leads to some kind of war situation. Because at that point, resources are the only thing of any value.
War with who, though?
I don't know.
Nobody will
Russia?
Have any money to start a war, really.
I guess that's true, yeah.
The wars are facilitated by fiat money.
Yeah, that's true.
And
I didn't think of it that
without fiat money, nobody, you know, other than the bad guys, nobody really wants to fight each other. And if we're pulling all our troops out of every country and we're basically going to take care of ourselves for a while and not trade with anybody and not deal with anybody, you know, take care of our own country, there's going to be no need for war. We have plenty of resources in the United States. We've been hiding it for so long. We're chock full of resources.
Okay. All right.
It's the bad guys who want to turn a currency collapse into a war.
Yeah.
Because that feeds into – that's why, you know, I'm trying to get the word out that this doesn't have to be a violent transition.
This
can be a peaceful transition. Once you understand what happened in the past – and our potential for the future, it could be a really good thing.
That's the way you're making it sound, and I'm hopeful that that is the case. I'm sure.
I think Ron Paul is saying the same thing, and he's been working on this a whole lot longer than I've been working on it.
Now, have there been any sort of like, did you say that guy from Boston was DeVoe?
Yes, Ian DeVoe.
Have there been any sort of like, you know, have they sort of tipped their hand a little bit that this is, that you're on to something? Do you know what I mean? Whether it's Greenspan or DeVoe or any of the sort of insiders on the good guy side, have they, not necessarily to you, but even to the point of how they publish the comic on the website?
Well, I mean, they moved it and they took away the big red exclamation point. And the other comic, the third comic that I didn't talk about is something called Banking Basics. And it's just a little comic about, you know, the basics of banking, how checks work and things like that. But that comic was originally introduced in 1987 when Greenspan took over the Federal Reserve. When they redid it, the new comic has all these pictures of gold in it. Gold coins being cashed in at a bank, gold in this girl's hand when she's standing in line at the teller machine, a little kid putting gold in his penny bank. It has gotten to the point of obvious that this is where this is heading.
Yeah. And whether we make it out okay or not depends on whether people know to ask for the right thing.
To demand the right thing, really. Yeah, it depends on, one, how well the good guys have prepared us for this. You know, what is their plan? What are they going to announce? What are the speeches that are going to be made? Who is going to be our leader? Are we going to turn to Ron Paul and think, God, you've been warning of this for so long, and now it's here. What do we do now? And hopefully they have answers for that, and I believe they do. But it ain't going to be easy. There's still a lot of lessons to be learned because people will lose fortunes. You know, those who have a lot aren't going to be real happy, you know, only getting what they've paid into Social Security.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I'm only like 31, so I'm fucked.
Hey, you know, not really, because if you think about it, Social Security has a cap. You only pay a certain amount. I think it's $120,000, and all of a sudden, anything you make over $120,000, you don't have to pay anything more.
I'm not making anywhere near $120,000, so.
I get it, but listen, there's a reason for that, and the reason was they didn't want, you know, those people making $50, $60 million having to pay $2 million in Social Security, because then they'd have to pay them back, and they'd still be the richest ones around.
That's true, yeah.
So by placing that cap on Social Security, it kind of slices off that top half of the ultra-rich.
Okay.
When they reintroduce a new currency.
Now, if what you're saying is accurate and, you know, we're on the verge of this massive collapse, aside from going out and maxing out their credit cards, which I do not endorse, is not a good idea because,
Bad
karma, and, you know, you might be waiting another, like, 6 months or something for this thing to happen, and then you're going to have
to keep paying
huge minimum balance payments. So what do you suggest people do in general here? I guess you could say regardless of how the whole thing shakes out as far as whether we go into a new fiat currency or whether we go into a gold-backed economy in general, what should people be doing right now, you know, to prepare themselves for the impending collapse of the economy?
Yep. Well, excellent question, and it's something I addressed just recently in one of the letters I posted on the website, and it's free to get in that part, and it's called the Final Checklist for Everybody. And what it does is it talks a little about, you know, how our assets are now electronic blips and how insecure they are and the ability for those things to go away. It gets into that a little bit, but at the end, it gives you a little checklist of things that you're going to want to do. And let me give you a couple of those. First thing you're going to want to do is to remove yourself as much as possible from the electronic financial system. What does that mean? You know, if you have $500 in the bank and you don't need all that money in there, go get the cash out, stick it under your pillow, stick it in a safe, stick it where no one can find it, and only, you know, put the cash back in if you need to pay a bill by check, whatever it is, because the chaos that's going to ensue once the first bank goes down and people start going to their bank saying, oh, I'm a little worried about my money, once that starts, there's no ending it. You can watch It's a Wonderful Life to get the whole full spectrum of what a bank run looks like.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing you want to do. Get your money out of the electronic system as best you can. The second thing you want to do is get some food and water. You know, pretend you're going camping for a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
Get enough dried food, enough, you know, water in storage. I live in California around the San Francisco area, so we're always thinking about earthquake preparedness. You know, if there's an earthquake and the power's out and the water's out, we can't get food for 4 or 5 days. You know, I've expanded that to 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, go to Costco, go to Walmart and buy yourself some big bags of rice and just have enough food. I'm not saying this is going to happen definitely, but I don't see it being that smooth that everything just keeps going as if nothing had happened. You know, and most grocery stores, once a panic ensues, you got a couple hours to get some food and then you're out of luck. It's gone because they turn stock in 3 or 4 days at a grocery store. And when there's a panic, everybody's going to go there. Now, the problem there is it's probably going to be looted because none of the check registers will work and none of the credit card machines will work. And, you know, who knows if the electricity is even going to be on.
Exactly.
Anyway, so it's one of those things where pretend you're going camping for a couple months.
Okay.
And then you're going to want to think about, you're going to want some gold, and you're going to want some silver, and you're going to want some cash. Now, the gold and silver, they won't be accepted in the first couple months. They won't. People aren't conditioned to know the value of gold and silver. Those will be your savings account. Get 1 ounce coins. Don't get too big of, you know, don't buy gigantic bars, mainly because you don't know what's in it these days. Just get the 1 ounce coins of silver, especially gold is wonderful. And you're going to want some cash to live off because most people will not, you know, they'll be conditioned to take cash.
Yeah. You don't want to be a moron and trade like $10,000 worth of gold for a bottle of water because that's all, you know, because they don't know what it's worth either. Yeah.
But the key to the cash is that you're probably going to be the only one with cash. Because if the banks go down, the ATMs go down, you know, most people don't even carry cash around anymore. They're running to get a coffee and they slide their little credit card in.
Yeah.
It's really gotten that bad. So you're going to want some cash. You're going to want some gold and silver for your savings. That's your long-term type of stuff. And then for me, piles of basic necessities, such as soap and water and medicines, definitely. You get extra medicine, you know, get an extra prescription because if things do break down for a month or two, you're not going to have access to any of that.
Yeah.
Especially medicines that, you know, are life-sustaining and you have to have it. So go get yourself some medicines as fast as you can. And then it's the little things. And things like toilet paper is a great example. A buddy of mine said, well, you got enough toilet paper? I said, actually, no. I probably have enough for a week or so. So I went and stocked up on toilet paper, and it's all those things. And you always want to get as much as you can because you could use it as barter.
Yeah, so I was going to suggest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be a lot of barter potential. Alcohol is a great barter thing. You know, get the little airplane bottles because some people can't go without their little shot of vodka, and it's easily transportable. It makes a good money because it's so small, those airplane bottles. Stuff like that. So those, you know, a lot of basic necessities. Then we get into protection and safety. This is kind of where I hate to recommend it, but I'm going to, is get a gun.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying you'll ever have to use it. What I'm saying is, without a lot of information, you might be sitting in your house and the radio won't work and the TV won't work and nothing will work and you'll be scared to death. If you have a gun, you'll be less scared. Learn how to use it. Remember the moral responsibility of having a gun, but you're going to want something. You don't want to be sitting there while, you know, anything can happen and not get enough information. But on the safety side, the most important thing you can do is get to know your neighbors and get with them when things start falling apart.
Yeah.
Because there's safety in numbers. You can help each other. These are people you can barter with and go back and forth with, and they'll have news of what's going on and how the progress is changing and things like that. Now, a lot of this is in case the media systems go down.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is more than possible. And if you listen to Cliff High, it's probable. So, you know, that'll be your neighbors are going to be your best friends even if you don't like them. And then the last thing I talk about is tools to rebuild your future. Once all this settles down, and we basically, in globalization, everybody comes home, we institute a new monetary system, there's going to be a lot of potential to do whatever you want to do. What was your dream? You know, did you want to be a clothes designer? Well, there's not going to be a lot of fabric. Maybe go out and get some fabric so that you can be the only clothes designer in your little community. A lot of this will be community-based, because some of the things that Ron Paul talks about is, with the collapse of the dollar, the federal government will be in a shambles, and we'll go back to state government, basically.
Yeah, like a regional type of,
you know, the federal government will be very small. And it makes sense. It goes back to the original Constitution, where states had all the power and the federal government didn't have much. But the idea is, think about what you want to be and what tools you'll need to be that person. If you want to be a bread baker, maybe you'll go out and, you know, buy a whole bunch of flour and yeast and paper bags so that you can sell bread at the local market. Because there'll be a lot of, you know, you've seen that already, a lot of local farmers markets crop up all over the states these days.
Yeah.
That is, I think it's part of the conditioning to get us ready for that. Because if we can't import all this stuff from China or Mexico or wherever, you know, South America, we're going to have to turn into farmers ourselves. And, you know, some people will be better at growing beans than other people will be, you know, better at making coffee. I don't know what the trade-offs are going to be, but try to figure out what you want to be and make sure you have the tools for it.
All right.
And those are kind of the things that I had talked about in my article, and there's a billion other things, and every person will have a different need, being if they're in the city, in the country, in cold climates, in warm climates. Everybody's going to have a different set of needs.
Absolutely, that's for sure.
The key is to think about it, and the key is to at least start the preparation and not to be too freaked out when it starts going down.
That's the toughest part, I think, but hopefully you know, people won't be. Hopefully this interview will reach them before it all goes down.
I have a feeling this might be the lost interview that never came out, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'll play it for my neighbors then when we're...
Send me a copy as soon as you get it.
Yeah, I'll send you a digital copy as soon as it's uploaded and edited and everything else. But
there you go.
Thanks for the extra time. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for giving me the opportunity to
talk
about it. And a lot of this stuff is massively difficult to explain, especially about the comics and all that. If you go on the website, you can actually see what those comics are and see the different, you know, what she writes in the sand and all the different issues related to it.
So I normally here at the end of the show, we ask what's next for the guest. But as we've kind of established here in this conversation that, you know, the future itself is tenuous at best for Bix Weir, for me, for the economy, for the listeners. But, you know, so it sounds like you're sort of just riding this wave here as we close out 2010 and get ready for 2011 and whatever this economic crisis will bring.
Yes and no. I'm doing my best to try to educate people on what happened and what's coming, and it doesn't have to be such a bad thing. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that light could be an amazing new reinvention of our country and the way we live.
Or it could be an oncoming train.
Or it could be an oncoming train, but, you know, we're going to take it as it comes. And truthfully, there's the best thing we can do is to smile as it comes towards us.
I like that attitude, Bix. I like that attitude a lot. As Bix has been saying, a lot of this material is available at roadtoruta.com. Pretty simple, road to, and then you spell Ruta, roota.com. And all his theories and his background information on all this stuff is fleshed out there. So folks should definitely check that out. There's a subscription service as well for even more in-depth analysis from Bix Weir. So head on over to roadtoruta.com to find out more about this really remarkable theory. And as I said at the beginning of the show, you hear so many conspiracy people just pretty much saying, you know, we're headed towards our doom. But at least you're putting a positive spin on it, and I hope have uncovered the possibility that there are people on the inside that have our best interests at heart, because oftentimes it seems that's not the case at all. And so I want to thank you for coming on the show, Bix. I hope that this interview reaches people before all this stuff goes down, and if not, you know, when they eventually set the internet back up in this new world, I'll be sure to post your interview then. I presume that there'll be an internet in the post economic collapse world, correct?
I'm hoping so. I do have a lot of kind of positive feelings towards what's going to happen. It won't be easy to get through. I'm glad you called me about this interview, and it's been a wonderful chance to get this word out there and to get people thinking along the lines of the future might not be so bleak.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, Bix, we'll have you back on the show in the future. You know, could be 6 months from now, could be a year from now. We may be sitting here still waiting for the other shoe to drop, and I promise we'll have you on to extrapolate and, you know, expand upon your theory and sort of give us an updated version of the timeline in the event that, you know, things go a little slower than you expect, because I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire on that. I know a lot of people out there really sort of take umbrage at predictions and sort of forecasts and that sort of thing. But, you know, I know that it's a very, especially in the financial market and the conspiracy world, it's very difficult to sort of pin down the correct timeline on these things.
It is, and, you know, you risk a lot when you throw out predictions, but hopefully I've given enough information on the website and in this interview that spark somebody's interest to go out there and really think for themselves and figure out whether or not what I'm saying is doable.
Absolutely, that's for sure, folks. So with that in mind, thank you once again for coming on the show, Bix. It's been a great conversation, and for better or for worse, I look forward to seeing how this all unfolds.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 6. Big, big thanks to Bix Weir for coming on the show, giving us so much time, and for choosing BOA Audio as the first program he's appeared on to discuss the Road to Ruta conspiracy theory. You can find out more from Bix Weir at the website www.roadtoruta.com. Pretty simple, all one word, Road to Ruta, roota.com. There you can find out more about the Road to Ruta conspiracy theory, see excerpts from the comics that started it all, and read articles from Bix Weir on the economy in general. RoadToRuta.com. Check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio listener feedback. And since we're coming at you really, really late in the process, and quite frankly, I'm kind of exhausted, folks, we are going to do a very light edition of listener feedback here this week. I didn't want to skip it altogether, but I am also way too tired to do my usual post-show ramblings. Don't worry, we're going to be taping the end cap of the holiday special in just a few short days, so we're definitely going to be doing a lot of listener feedback on that episode. Nonetheless, let's touch on a couple of emails here. First one comes from Sean, who was featured on last week's BOA Audio listener feedback. He says, "Whoops, didn't think for a minute you'd read my email on the air. No, of course smoking isn't cool. When am I going to learn that irony doesn't translate too well to print? Take it easy, Sean." First of all, hopefully it was a pleasant surprise that I read your email on the air, Sean. For anybody else who writes to me, if you don't want me to read the email on the show, please let me know. Most of the time, folks do write to me with the idea that their email may make it onto the program. Anyway, like I said, hopefully it wasn't a problem, Sean, and I had a feeling that your point about smoking being cool was sarcastic. I just figured I'd use it to climb up on the soapbox and rail against smoking. Even though I'm a smoker, I just, you know, feel like it's my duty to speak out against it, because I don't want to ever be seen as someone who's endorsing it or is some kind of role model for smoking. So no worries on my end, Sean. Hopefully all is good on your end as well. Congratulations, back-to-back appearances on listener feedback. That may be some kind of record, although I'd have to look. I think maybe Mags made a double shot appearance as well. The other email we'll feature here this week comes from Steve, no hometown listed. He says, I love your show. I listen on my iPod at work. It makes the day go by much easier. I'm a Keelian in the way I see the paranormal. It is a shame you never had the chance to interview John Keel. I think he had a good grasp on the paranormal experience. I think you asked for some ideas about a debate episode. How about Stan Friedman versus Bart Sabrell? Or Lauren Coleman versus Gian Cassar? Anyway, keep up the great work, and thanks for the show. Steve. Couple of points here to respond to. I think I might have mentioned this on a previous edition of the show or during an appearance on a different program, but John Keel was definitely on the to-do list for BOA Audio, and around the end of 2008, I believe, I was trying to get a hold of John Keel, sort of working the angles to make that interview happen, but at that point, his health had deteriorated to the point that it just was not going to be a possibility, and of course, he passed away about 6 months later. Truly a shame, definitely a legend, somebody I wish I had the chance to speak to, and, you know, there's not much more to say about it than that. It's just one of those conversations that we'll never get a chance to hear, and one that slipped through the fingers of BOA Audio, but gave us pause to remember that there are a lot of great legendary folks out there that we haven't had the chance to speak to that we better track down as the show progresses here into the future. Secondly, with regards to the debate episode, that's an old request. I'm surprised that somebody still remembers that. I think I made that request back in season 3 or 4. And I like your suggestion, Stan Friedman versus Bart Sabrell or Lauren Coleman versus Gian Cassar. I'll definitely keep them in mind. I'm kind of thinking lately, though, an exopolitics debate would be really interesting. I'm trying to figure out exactly who'd be the best folks for that. So that covers the two big points here of Steve's email. Thanks for writing in, Steve. Much appreciated. Thank you for the debate suggestions. Let's open this up once again to the BOA Audio listeners. What kind of debates do you want to hear on the program? I'm not talking contentious debates. I'd prefer to have two thoughtful, interesting people with divergent points of view. Less a debate, really, than more a conversation where we try to come to some kind of common ground. But nonetheless, throw me your ideas. Let me know what you think. Who would you like to hear debate or have a meeting of the minds, if you will, on the program? I mean, I've considered ideas sort of like a Stan Friedman-Jim Mars tandem conversation. I mean, that would be kind of cool, too, to take two folks who are from two very different realms and bring them together and see what kind of conversation comes from that. So that might be another idea for a future edition of the program, Odd Couples. So throw me your ideas, folks. I'd definitely love to hear them. And that's a great segue to the contact information. If you want to be a part of future editions of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, here are the ways to get in touch with me. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L ofamerica.com, and click the contact button. That'll put you on the road to getting in touch with me. And of course, the final way is to join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com, BOA's paranormal playground. Lots of great folks on there talking about the latest editions of BOA Audio, as well as esoterica in general and pop culture and sports. Theusofe.com, check it out, join in on the conversations. And of course, I'm on all the different social networking sites, Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. So befriend me, follow me, poke me, it's all good. I'd love to hear from you folks out there on the different social networking sites. Any of those avenues will allow you to contact me with your thoughts and feedback on BOA Audio as well as Banal of America. So shoot me a line and let me know what's on your mind. Up next, of course, it is the thanks portion of the show. Allow me to roll through the list of the esteemed and infamous BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, our contributing cartoonist Andy Carolan, and our webmaster Jeremy Boston. Lots of cool new articles posted at BOA from the awesome BOA staff. Richard Thomas has a text interview with Keith Chester, author of Strange Company, Military Encounters with UFOs in World War II, deals with Foo Fighters and a whole bunch of other pre-Roswell UFO events. We got a new piece from Regan Lee titled Change the Name, Change the Perception, and Change the Effect. It delves into the technique of changing the name of something to change the perception. A very cerebral edition of Regan Lee's Trickster's Realm. You definitely want to check that out as well. And finally, Leslie's Gray Matters just posted a few days ago, Angel Hair from the Sky. Talks about a classic UFO case that has some connections, possibly, to the chemtrail mystery. Fantastic find from Leslie, and definitely one that will have you thinking about what's going on up in the sky. So those are three new pieces from the staff at BOA, plus we got a slew of other stuff in the pipeline coming at you here as we close the book on 2010. We say it week in and week out, but it is the truth, my friends. If you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not reading the columns at Been All of America, then you're only getting half of the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Well, here we are at episode 3 of season 6, and I think it's safe to start asking once again for donations. Part of the reason why I say that is because in the next few weeks, you're going to be hearing a 2-hour interview with a guest who is in Italy. You're also going to be hearing an hour-long conversation with someone in the UK and another hour-long conversation with someone else in the UK. So the international calls have begun, and the bills, in turn, will soon start piling up. Plus, it's the holiday season, so if you want to help us out and, you know, throw a little change in the bucket, I'm not ringing the bell, but we do have a bucket, so if you could help us out, that would be great. How do you make a donation? That's simple. You go to beenallofamerica.com. There's a PayPal button right there on the homepage. You click that. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It is safe and secure. But maybe you don't trust the internet and you want to donate via snail mail. That's perfectly fine, and we have a way for you to do that. You can write to Tim Benall, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass., 01866, and you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T, and of course you can find all that information at the BOA website, but once again it is Tim Benall, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass., 01866. Two things of note if you're going to mail us a donation to the snail mail P.O. Box. First of all, include your email address so I can shoot you a line and thank you for the donation. The other part is, if you're going to mail us a check, please make it payable to Tim Benall, T-I-M-B-I-N-N-A-L-L, and not to Benall of America. As noted last week, we get some flack from the folks at the bank since we don't have a Benall of America bank account. They don't want to cash those checks. They won't cash those checks, and I have to get in touch with the donors and try and get it straightened out and get new donations sent to me to the proper salutation, I guess you could say. So make your donations to Tim Benall and not Benall of America. That would save you and me from a definite series of headaches, hassles, and pains in the butt. So there you go. Those are the two means to donate, PayPal as well as the P.O. Box. And as we say here at the end of the program all the time, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards keeping Benall of America and BOA Audio up and running, commercial-free, and freely available for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Next week on the program, it's really more like in a few short days, you're going to be able to get your hands on the 6th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special featuring the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman. There's not too much for me to say about this one. I haven't sat down and edited it yet, but I will be doing so tomorrow night. The great part about this one is we continue the annual tradition that we started a couple years ago featuring questions from BOA Audio listeners for Stanton Friedman. And interestingly enough, this year we got really some thought-provoking questions and some cool questions from not just listeners, but also former BOA Audio guests. Greg Bishop, Jason Offit, and Keith Chester had questions for Stan. Those are included, of course, in the interview alongside all the questions from BOA Audio listeners. In total, I think we featured 18 questions from various BOA Audio listeners, and everybody who submitted a question had theirs asked. And, of course, we deal with other stuff during the conversation as well. So it's a jam-packed interview with the father of modern-day ufology. It is the holiday tradition like no other, the BOA Audio Holiday Special, 6th annual. Do you believe it? I'm just stunned when I think about it. 6 years of holiday specials with the amazing Stanton Friedman. And on that note, we close the book on another edition of BOA Audio. Once again, big, big thanks to Bix Weir for coming on the show. Thanks to Sean and Steve for their emails and listener feedback. And as always, a heartfelt thanks to all you folks out there. Your support of BOA and BOA Audio does not go unnoticed. You guys are awesome. Thank you for your support of the program, and thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.